Welcome to another episode of AUSA's Army Real Talk. I am Mzinga Curry, Director of AUSA's Education and Programs Directorate, and today I have the opportunity to host this podcast episode focusing on her story, celebrating women and their contributions to the Army story. Due to COVID-19, AUSA had to cancel its Women's History Month program, so we decided to host a podcast discussing her story, especially since the history of women should not only be discussed in March, but all year. So I am delighted to welcome two remarkable women who are indeed contributing to women's history. Today, I will speak with Chief Warrant Officer 5, Phyllis Wilson, U.S. Army retired, President for the Women in Military Service for America, or WIMSA, Memorial Foundation. I also will speak with Command Sergeant Major Donna Brock, U.S. Army retired, and treasurer for the Army Women's Foundation and the executive coach and facilitator for Together with Veterans. Ladies, welcome. If you don't mind, I would love for you to introduce yourself to our audience by providing a brief introduction. Chief Wilson, will you start, please?
Sure, and thank you so much for having me. I'm very proud to call myself a military spouse, certainly a soldier for life, and a military mom. I'd like to say an Army mom, but, you know, you always have that one child that goes rogue, so I have an Air Force son as well, so very proud to be a military mom. Served for 37 years in the Army, combination of regular Army and Army Reserve, an intelligence soldier, and loved every bit of it. 37 years mixed and matched, enjoying just amazing opportunities, but I think I'm proudest to just call myself being a military mom.
And Chief Wilson, I must agree with you. I have an Army family. However, I kind of strayed away and I married an Air Force vet. My father does forgive me. However, you know, they do talk about us.
A Sergeant Major Brock. That's simply rivalry.
yes, exactly. Sergeant Major Brock, would you please share a bit about yourself as well?
Sure, thank you. As Chief said, I'm a soldier for life also. I served in the military for a little over 35 years. When I retired, my MOS is medical, so I was a combat medic all the way through. And when I retired, I was serving as the Command Sergeant Major for the U.S. Army MedCom, and I was the senior enlisted advisor to the Surgeon General for the Army. I will tell you that I loved my career. I loved the Army, and I absolutely loved all the experiences that I had. The biggest thing about it is that just watching the changes of the generations as we've gone through the years. But I'm still serving, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. And when I say still serving, I coach not only the Department of Defense civilians, I'm also an executive coach for anybody who called my phone. Anyway, I do have two children. And my son lives in California. He just recently was discharged from the National Guard. So I'm a proud mother of a soldier or a veteran now. And my daughter, she lives in St. Louis, and she is a elementary school teacher. I have a couple grandchildren, and I'm just telling you, life is good right now.
Very, very nice. Well, ladies, thank you both for your service and your family service, as well as taking the time to speak with us today. So I'm going to kind of start at the beginning, you know, early years of your life. And my first question is, what motivated you to join the Army?
Sure. So I remember taking the ASVAB in high school, and all of the recruiters contacted me afterwards, but nobody in my family had served. So I didn't really understand and sort of poo-pooed that and decided I would, you know, go to college. And that didn't work out too terribly well, only because I didn't understand how to pay for it and was trying to work my way through. So I ultimately joined the Army for the education, but then stayed really because of fell in love with all aspects of Army life. Now, don't misunderstand me. I was in very tactical units, and so we were out in the field, and you're dirty, you're cold, you're hungry, you're shivering. But that makes part of the story where you actually truly enjoy the days when the sun is shining like today and it's just beautiful outside.
Very nice. So, Sergeant Major, what motivated you to join the Army?
I think that 2 years prior to me joining was my moment of reckoning for myself. My mother died the summer after I graduated from high school. It was sudden and unexpected. And I believe that if she would have still been alive, I'd probably be a nun, because that's what she was kind of gearing us kids for. But instead, of course, I had to work through life and try to find myself during that time right after a lot of family dynamics going on. I was the oldest of 8 kids. My father got married really quickly, and it wasn't working for me. So I just walked into a recruiter's office after watching a commercial on TV, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll do that. So I decided to join. I signed up for 4 years, and I was positive I was going to get out, but the old hook got me. And I stayed in because I just was enjoying it. I saw what it was doing as far as my career-wise, learning so much and trying to achieve excellence. So that's pretty much what motivated me to join as well as to stay.
Wonderful. And Sergeant Major, so you spoke about, you know, the possible vision your mother would have had for you. When you were a child or a teenager, were your goals an accomplishment? Because both of you ladies are very successful. You have done great and wonderful things in the Army and beyond. But did you see those things when you were a child, or was it developed later on in life?
Yeah, as far as the Army, I did not. What I saw as a child, I thought, you know, I was going to go to college. I was thinking that now the only thing that stayed the same was medical. I wanted to do something in the medical arena. But when I first joined, I thought I was going to be a surgical tech, but that didn't pan out. They talked me into being a medic, which I'm kind of actually glad they did. But I didn't have those aspirations, if you will, like joining the Army. It was more of we're a very religious Catholic family. And my mom was pretty tough, but yet gentle. But she really guided us, I thought, in the right direction. So our morals and values was what it was all about for us.
That leads me to think about those who influenced you throughout your life. So both, Chief as well as Sergeant Major, while you were serving within the Army, did you have a mentor? And if so, could you explain or share a little bit of how that shaped your life?
I remember as a young soldier having a senior warrant officer. Of course, I came in the Army in the early 80s. So the warrant officers that I dealt with, many of them were intel, and they had served in Vietnam. So they were a very different breed than what we see nowadays. And it harkens back to what Sergeant Major was saying about watching the generations change within the military in our tenure. But there was one, a W-3 at the time, that I just, for some reason, I can't say I idolized him, but I certainly saw the way he carried himself, his military bearing, just everything about him. And he seemed to take me under his wing and coached me and kicked me in the backside when I needed it. You know, young troop, didn't really understand the military at all. And I really, in the intel community, we were warrant heavy, if you will, and it was a good thing. I really enjoyed watching, observing, seeing how he interacted and the way he coached and nudged people without them ever really realizing. And I thought, I want to be able to do that someday. So I was an observer of his style. And then later on, several years later, 6-7 years later, when I went to apply to become a warrant officer, we needed a letter. You have to have a letter from a senior warrant, ideally in your MOS, your skill set. So I reached back to him and asked for that letter. And I'll tell you, I'm going to choke up even to this day. He wrote in that letter, if I could choose one soldier to replace me as I prepare to retire, it would be Phyllis. I thought, oh my God, I can't let this guy down. That's the smartest tool you can ever do. I used that one time in a letter that I wrote as a senior warrant for an applicant to become a warrant officer. One time, because that's it, you're done. The burden, the cross, the joy that all puts on the next generation to propel, to carry yourself forward, to make sure you don't do anything to make him ever regret that. So I think, you know, he's always been my mentor. We're still in touch to this day.
Oh, beautiful. Sergeant Major, have you had a mentor as well?
Absolutely. And I loved your story, Chief. It took me a little bit, you know, when we started talking about mentorship and everything, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I realized it years later that my very first mentor was my first squad leader, and I'll never forget him. His name was Sergeant Dennis. It was within the first few years, my second duty assignment, I was in Germany. This guy, he was strapped. This is with the black boots back in the day when, you know, you would see the starched fatigues and the shiny black boots. I mean, he was perfect in every way. And he treated us like we were his own children. Very firm, but yet that caring attitude. So he was the very first person that I never forgot ever in my entire career. And I always wanted to be like him. And it was all about being the best person that you can be and always excelling. The next person that I was about a sergeant first class at E7. And one of my command sergeant majors kind of took me under his wing. And I really loved his character. And his name was Sergeant Major Pate. I'll never forget him because he really helped me to develop on how to treat soldiers, treat everyone. And he really, really left a lasting impression on me. And the last person was the one that was probably the hardest on me, Sergeant Major Griffin. I will never, ever, ever forget him. And I thank him to this day for what he taught me. He was really tough. I have some crazy stories that I could tell, but I'm not here. He was really tough. And I thought he hated me. I thought, oh my God, I was a first sergeant. I was his first sergeant. And I thought he was going to fire me at one time. But I stood up to him. And later on in the years, what made me realize that he taught me so much was soldiers would come up to me and say, oh, you're the first sergeant that Sergeant Major Griffin talked about. He loved you. He never told me that. So it really, really taught me a lot. But those are the ones, yes.
Remarkable. Both of you have great mentor stories, so I appreciate that. And I'm going to ask, either one of you can answer this, what would you say to our youth today, you know, who are aspiring to do great things, such as you did, or, you know, just working towards greatness?
One of the things that I would tell young folks now is, you have to know how to treat people. And that was one of the biggest things that I learned. And I think that's one of the things that made me successful. A lot of folks think that, you know, being in the military, you have to be hard. You have to be tough. And then, you know, what does that mean? Well, sure, you have to hold people accountable, but they're human. And you have to treat them like that and get to know them in order to have relationships and be able to get the best out of the people that you work with. That's number one. The other thing, too, is you can't forget yourself. You have to take care of yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of anyone else. But those are my big two that I would say, my advice.
Thank you. So now we're going to fast forward. Both of you are retired now, but still doing great and wonderful things in your community and beyond. So how does your military experience affect your life today?
That's funny because obviously still working for a entity that is all services. That's the interesting thing. Even though I was assigned to joint assignments in my career, military career, some of the Navy ranks still throw me, I won't lie. But that military experience has helped me tremendously. I would argue even especially the joint assignments, because now where I work, we look at all of the services. But at times I forget that because it now no longer is a military organization, there are many civilians that work with us and that we work with, that I still find myself using military time. If I say, you know, it's at 0730 or something, and people will look at me, what time is that? Or 1600, what time is that? And so we have to clarify some of those. But I think the biggest things that the military experience does that affects my life now is the structure, the ability to forecast, to plan, to think quickly on your feet, to be able to rebound when things change, because as we all know, planning goes out the window when we actually start executing. And so how do we think quickly, respond rapidly, and adjust fire, as we call it, right? And again, that's some of these terms that I've learned I have to stop using when I talk in civilian entities. Adjust fire sort of throws them off, but I'm trying to do better. It's been about 2 years since I retired.
Very nice. Yeah. It's funny because with working for AUSA, the association, I come in contact naturally with a lot of retirees. And I sometimes have to say, okay, please share the breakdown of the acronym. But that's all that's all part of the military life. So it's great. Okay, Sergeant Major, how has your military experience affected your life today?
I think the way it's affected it is because I have a love for soldiers. So obviously, I love working with veterans. I work with veterans as well as DOD civilians. I think because of the counseling and coaching and mentoring portion of what I used to do in the military, that's why it drew me into continuing to be an executive coach, not only for soldiers and veterans, but for civilians. The other thing about how the experience really affected me is because the military period is all about people. And that has always been my mantra, taking care of people, understanding people, working with them, helping them to grow. And I'm a people person. So what I'm doing now, it just totally fits with my personality, as well as everything that I learned, the values from the military, as well as just all the experience and that I've had with different people.
That actually is a good segue. So, Sergeant Major, you own your own business, Brock LMC, and you are also a community coach for the program Together with Veterans. If you don't mind, please share a little bit about your community coach role and as well as Brock LMC.
Okay. Well, as far as my community coaching Together with Veterans, Together with Veterans is a program that's really came from the VA, from the Veterans Administration. And what they're trying to do is in this program, we go to the grassroots of the rural communities throughout the United States. And what we're looking for is we're looking for the communities to work together to combat suicide prevention and suicide awareness with veterans. The beauty of my role is that I go in, we recruit the community, then we launch the program with them, get their buy-in, and it has to be majority veteran in the group. The coaching part for me is coaching them on how to reach out, how to extend their arms out and reach the veterans so they can understand what the resources are and where to go if they have problems, understand what suicide is all about. Now, these communities, it's not about them. They're not healthcare providers, even though healthcare providers are included in the community and the community groups, the teams. But what it's more for them to get awareness on how to ask the question. And that's what I really enjoy about the program because, again, we're helping veterans. And, you know, in these rural communities, they don't have the resources as opposed to the large cities where they have more resources to go to. But that's that portion of Together with Veterans. As far as my business, Brock LMC, of course, I am a veteran-owned. It's veteran-owned business. And what LMC stands for is Leading, Mentoring, and Coaching. So my other job, if you will, is acting as an executive coach and a facilitator as well of talking to folks about how to be a leader, how to work through challenges they may have and how to really action them, have goals, work through challenges with their team and work as a team together.
Interesting, in a positive way. Chief Wilson, so you are the president of the WIMSA Memorial Foundation. My first question is, what led you to accept this position? And then I would also like you to share a little bit about the foundation.
So last year, let's start with the actual memorial and the foundation. The Women's Memorial, Military Women's Memorial for short, because that's a long title, is located at the ceremonial entrance to Arlington National Cemetery. It's a curved half-round hemicycle is the official term, building beautiful stone wall that many people think is just a wall. It actually is a very large, almost like a museum behind there, 33,000 square feet. So last summer, I was actually at AUSA, so I'm going to blame this on AUSA that I'm doing this job now. It was right after Memorial Day, end of May, and I ran into the chairperson for the foundation, a retired Army two-star, and she asked me, she said, you've got a charity background, because I did have my own charity. Why don't you apply for this job as the president of the foundation? And in the past, there's only been two past presidents, and they're both retired women general officers. And so often in so many of these foundations and whatnot, it seems to be women general officers that are running women type organizations. And I just looked at her and said, okay, you do know I'm a warrant officer. I'm in W-5, and that's great, but I'm not a general. And she said, you know, it will always be women generals until somebody else that is qualified that isn't a general applies. And that was food for thought. So I mulled it over, and just a few days later, while I was debating, should I clean up, dust up the resume and submit, I parked at a Harris Teeter here in Northern Virginia in a veteran parking spot and got out. And instantly a gentleman says to me, excuse me, that's veteran parking. He's like, is your husband with you? We've been down this road more than once, and I hear from so many women, or if I'm telling this story in a group, a lot of head nods. They've been there, done that. Mm. We're still challenged to this day that we're not thought of necessarily as a veteran. So we had a conversation. He finally acquiesced. He had served as well. I thanked him for his service, and we went through the whole, really, where were you assigned? What branch of service? We went through all of that. But as I was in the grocery store, I wasn't upset with him, but I just kept to thinking, if I had been a man, whether I had served or not, and gotten out of that car in a veteran parking space, he would not have challenged me. And so one of the reasons I really wasn't going to take the job is I thought, I'm a soldier, not a female or a woman soldier, I'm a soldier. But until we get to the day where none of us are challenged for parking in a veteran parking space, that we deserve the same right to park there as any man does, I guess we do still need to tell that story. And many people don't realize that women have served in uniform, many times dressed as a man, because they weren't legally allowed to serve all the way back to the Revolutionary War. So yeah, to have this opportunity to tell this entire story from obviously the founding of this nation till today and how much things have changed is just a fantastic opportunity. So I would encourage anybody, go to check out our website, womensmemorial.org, or when COVID's over, come see us for real. It's great. We have a rooftop terrace that looks straight down. The first building that you see as you look towards Washington, D.C., right down the road, is the Lincoln Memorial. So we have a bird's eye view of Washington, D.C. It's a fantastic. But then if you do an about face, which I'm happy to be able to know that most everybody that hears this will know what I'm talking about, an about face on our rooftop, and you're looking up the hill towards Arlington House, but you have all of the white grave markers in Arlington National Cemetery that go up the hill. And the John F. Kennedy grave site, you'll see the illuminated torch there. That flame is going, and it's just a fantastic place and no better job. I thought I had great jobs in the military. This is the best job ever for me.
Wonderful. And the Memorial Foundation is actually very nice. I had opportunity to visit with AUSA. And your story is very intriguing. It's unfortunate that was done, but I love the fact that you were able to educate him. So that's a beautiful thing. So my last question, and I'll make it a little fun. I would like both of you to share, if you were writing a book or a script for a movie, what would your title be based on how you have contributed to the Army story? Sergeant Major, if you don't mind, would you answer that first, please?
That's kind of a funny one, because I kind of mentioned it earlier. If I had a book written about me, I'd say it's all about people. That would be the name of my book. Mm. And the reason I would say that is because during my tenure, especially my last 15 years as a Command Sergeant Major, a lot of folks didn't like my style. And it had to do with me being a woman who worked with feelings and caring. A lot of folks wanted me to be a lot tougher than I was, even though I was tough, because I will tell you, when I was a drill sergeant, I was pretty tough. You know, it's a role that you play. And one day when I was a first sergeant, I was walking outside of a hospital, and I noticed these soldiers were all standing next to each other and talking to each other, and they looked around and saw me, and half of them did parade rest. They turned and they put their hands behind their back like they were standing at attention. And I just kind of looked at them and I said, carry on, kept on going. I thought that was weird because the other ones were my soldiers and they were laughing. And so later my soldiers told me that they said, oh my God, you know her? That's your first sergeant? And they said, yeah, she's cool. And these soldiers said, because they knew me when I was a drill sergeant. So that was really funny. But a lot of folks didn't like my style. So I think that a lot of my success, I feel, was because I was a people person and I took care of people. And that's what my story was all about.
Very nice. That likely will be your legacy. So that's really nice. Chief Wilson, what would your book title or script title be?
Again, similar to Sergeant Major, I was like, okay, what on earth can this be? Because, and I got to laugh because my mom always loves to tell this story that at 4 years old, and I'm stair-step kids, I'm the middle child. I have two older and two younger, and we're all, the greatest difference is about 14 months between us. So like if one of us, I was four, so my brothers were 3 and 2, my sisters were 5 and 6. She had laid us all down on a Saturday afternoon for naps. And at four, man, I wanted to see the world apparently because I ran away from home to go to a McDonald's at four. And this is a long time ago. I was more than a mile away from my house. This elderly couple stopped, asked me, you know, my name, where was I going? I emphatically told them where I was going. I had no money, but I was going to McDonald's. So I guess I must have thought I had skills back then too. And they brought me home. I do remember that spanking. I will tell you that much. So as I think about my travels and love to be able to see the world, I really struggled with this. But first of it was just to believe. And then I got a little bit bigger on that. And I thought something along the lines of, if you can dream it, you can be it. And I have tried to mentor and coach and tell people, we all have self-doubt. They think that these generals and the senior sergeant majors and senior warrant officers, they're there and they, you know, sometimes it's a front because if we're up there speaking, we have to come off as we're cool, but we might've been quaking. I still know senior people that throw up before they go out to a town hall. So, I mean, it is what it is, but as Sergeant Major said, it's the role that we must serve in. And so you just have to do what the situation calls for. But if you can dream it, you can be it. And I think along those lines, I have told so many people, just dream it. Along the same way, I had warrant officer candidate rank that I always carried in my right front pocket. I'm OCD. My chapstick goes in my left front pocket. My reading glasses go in the lower leg pocket on the right side. But in the right hand normal pocket, a front pocket of a pair of trousers in the uniform, with always at least one Velcro WOC warrant officer candidate. And what I would meet an NCO that I thought showed me everything that I thought should become a warrant officer in the United States Army, I would coin them if I had the opportunity, but I would also give them that, shake their hand just like I'm giving them a military coin with that patch and say, I want to see that on your chest someday. And I've had 8 of them that have contacted me to say, you caused me to dream about that, and now they are it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really the overarching. It's a long storyline. If you can dream it, you can be it. But you've got to dream it. You've got to put the work in to get you there.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Ladies, Chief Sergeant Major, thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you for speaking with me about your experience. It was very fascinating. And I know our listeners are going to embrace this, her story, celebrating women and their contribution to the Army story, much like I have. So thank you again, both, for taking the time to speak with me and sharing a bit with our listening audience.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah!